Jenkins, you were talking about order selection. Please continue on. Then just to kind of run down, we're going to, because this stuff is so important, after the order of selection discussion, we'll have a public comment time again, so, okay?
Let's start with your question then, before I talk about something else.
So do we have the speaker or the, So just out of curiosity, what will client assistance program have anything new they can say or do with this order of a selection? And at what point really would they even be able to talk to Kathy? I forget if they have to be just on that list or they have to be an active client. And then just, is there anything I wonder if they could do anything different, CAP, if they had the right kind of request or complaint or something.
As far as the client assistance program goes, a consumer at any time can call CAP or email CAP. You don't even necessarily need to be a client of the agency to talk to them or anything.
All right.
There really isn't a ton of restrictions there. So as far as order of selection goes, what CAP can do doesn't really change. They still serve that same role. The one other thing I wanted to address with order of selection is how agency staff statewide are going to be trained.
Carol?
Yes.
So I apologize. So something new for CAP, though, would be certainly they might be handling requests from people that thought that they should be categorized differently.
Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be.
Okay. So certainly something that CAP might be doing in the future would be handling requests from people who thought that they should have been categorized differently. And then CAP would do their normal process of working with the agency to see what documentation was provided and make sure that things were handled properly.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be, yes, the case where, CAP could be involved. So with the training of staff statewide, the next monthly supervisors meeting is actually Wednesday. And so that following week, the second week of February, starting the week of the 11th, I'm going to be going to each of the district meetings, and we'll be training supervisors and staff on order of selection. And then Julie Buren will also be with me via conference call to train staff on the AWARE portion and how those data pages work, as well as helping with those eligibility letters. Because depending on if your job retention, eligible, not eligible on the wait list, the eligibility letter that a client receives will read a little differently. So if there's other questions, I'm happy to answer those.
I got one here. I could.
Thanks. Here in Nebraska, we got two separate vocational rehabilitations agencies. I think in the past, maybe I'm oversimplifying things, but if it had anything to do with someone that was blindness related, there was no question that the commission would serve them. Now, with the order selection and perhaps multiple disabilities, do you foresee that changing, or would they go to whatever agency could serve them first? Do you expect anything changing?
No, because with any consumer, if there's any visual impairment of any kind, we are the primary serving VR agency. And so with both agencies being in an order of selection, they're going to be on a wait list, for the near future, regardless of which agency they go to. But if they do have a visual impairment and they go to general VR first, they will say, no, we're sorry, you need to go to the Commission for the Blind. That's not going to change. We've worked really hard with General VR and Developmental Disability Services and the Department of Education and stuff to educate, teachers, other staff, other agencies on, that the commission is a VR agency and we are the primary serving VR agencies for consumers who are blind or visually impaired.
Regarding February 13th, it's going to be a public meeting. do we have the documents prepared? Is it just a formality? People come, they have a chance to be heard. And then I think I heard Carlos say that it would become effective March 1st. Can you just tell us a little bit about that process?
Our goal for effective date is March 1st. The public meeting is for, and it will be statewide. So it will be available Lincoln, Omaha, Norfolk, Kearney, North Platte, and Scotts Bluff. So statewide, consumers can go to any of those offices and be a part of that public meeting, just the same way that we're doing it now with Chad being in Scotts Bluff. So the process is a part of the combined state plan. RSA has to grant the request to reopen the combined state plan. And once that happens, then we can, amend that and put, all the information required about order of selection. But that's not going to be ready, depending on how quick RSA does that. But that document is, the public can read it. But what's out there now is a frequently asked questions document about order of selection. So I'm assuming, Kathy will make that document available still, at each location for that. But we do have to compile all the questions, comments at that public meeting for the combined state plan.
Carol?
Mm-hmm.
So the rules that you've been explaining to us that you've put together for order selection in Nebraska, is that the same? If I was to go to another blindness VR agency in the country that's under order of selection, would they be the exact same rules, or is this customized to every agency that goes into order of selection?
In general, the rules are the same. The federal level or the federal rules are the same for every agency. The only uniqueness with our agency is when we do an internal policy, we do copy the language from Chapter 1, and it's Chapter 1, Section 9, which covers order of selection for the agency. If you're curious, you can go read it. So some of that specific language is in our own internal policy, which could differ from other states. But I did reach out, and I worked a lot with Minnesota Blind, and Carol Panko, who's the director of Minnesota Blind. She's also the president, chairperson of NCSAB, and so she works with RSA a lot, and she's done a wonderful job educating me on all of this. So Minnesota, I know, does the same thing. General VR in general here in Nebraska does the same thing. It's just their, functional limitations and stuff look a little different based on the disabilities and things.
Regarding the Center for the Blind, sometimes we have vacancies, sometimes we don't. Just a scenario, let's say that someone's newer to significant blindness, they're not on the waiting list, and we have an opening at the center, and they're willing to go. Can they go to the center, or do they have to wait their turn? How would that work?
If they are on the wait list,
or they're not?
Yes. With our training center, priority always goes to Nebraska consumers. One thing that we have started to do, each district can now send a senior blind consumer to the center, which one will help with, keeping the center full. And it will also help with the budget, because we have at the moment, requesting more older blind funds. So that'll help with that, and then spending a little less VR fund. So it sounds really bizarre, but it is a very effective strategy. But just some information on that. Our staff statewide have done a wonderful job of getting those pre-SA students to come to the center. So our consumer base is age-wise has shifted to a younger population, but it's still a good chunk of our consumers who attend the center have actually been clients for a while. And so it's not that, the new clients go to the center. It's a combination of the two, but for the most part, The majority is those who have been clients a while.
Good.
Other questions?
How about any? Should we do public comment time? Yeah.
All right. Well, I think this would be a good time for public comment. So, if anybody has a comment they want to make, can you shout out your name so we can add you to the list?
Barbara.
Barbara. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Anybody else? Well, we'll start with Barbara and see what happens. But, you know, it's important that we have the microphone so everybody can be heard. So here you go.
Thank you. I guess I just, the one comment that I want to make is that I hope that whatever we are doing as we go forward, that we make sure that the spirit leads the letter of whatever it is that we're doing. I need to understand better, I guess, some of the nuances of order of selection. You know, my experience with it from years of having worked at the commission and being on the commission board and whatever. Well, it wasn't called a commission then, but anyway, order of selection, generally, we didn't ever do it, and I'm sorry we're having to do it now. But the blind people would fit that category and the number one category because of the fact that we do things differently. I mean, the functionally to live in the world, we use other ways of doing it from what the general public does. And so I'm hoping that we don't get caught up in the kinds of definitions or whatever that will make us forget about that will help people who are applying to know what they need to do to qualify, not to qualify. And I'm also still interested in if there is an opening in the center and there's someone who is a blind person who isn't, maybe, you know, they haven't done all the stuff that needed to happen, but they need to be there, and there is clearly an opening with no other person specifically waiting for it. Is that person going to have to be in the right place at the right time in the order of selection in order to go to the center immediately, or are they going to need to wait?
Carlos,
I can answer it.
Okay. Good question. Thank you.
So, Barbara, the first part, you know, with our agency has a very strong philosophy, and our counselors statewide have a very strong philosophy and want to serve consumers and, you know, serve them to the absolute best of their abilities. But with order of selection, it might be easier if I use myself as an example to maybe help cement the concept of order of selection. So me, when I was a client, I don't know, it's been a lot of years ago,
11.
Newly blinded, no skills, no nothing, you know, rock bottom. I had many functional limitations. You know, mobility was a problem. I wouldn't say my interpersonal skills were a problem. Communication was becoming a problem, not because I'm, you know, not verbal. But print became difficult, so my written communication was a problem. I couldn't do it very well anymore. Not that I didn't know how, And communication is also rehab technology. And so I didn't have those devices and stuff. I had a functional limitation in work skills because I, you know, couldn't do my job. You know, going into education, I didn't know how I was gonna do that. And so I probably would have, you know, at least had 5 functional limitations. You know, I went to the training center, you know, got skills, got lots of work experience, whatever. Now the Carol Jenkins at present, if I were to apply for services, I wouldn't have any functional limitations. Yes, I'm blind, but I have the knowledge and skills and everything I need. So yes, I agree that, you know, blindness, you know, should put clients in that category A, and that is how our agency was functioning for however many years. All of our clients were most significantly disabled. But with order of selection, you can't do that. You're required to develop priority categories based on disability with those functional limitations. It's not that the agency agrees with it, disagrees with it, but it's the situation that we're in. So as far as the center goes, it's not that you have to be in the right place at the right time. In the beginning, all of the priority categories are going to be closed until the agency can balance our budget. Once that happens, we will determine, you know, how many clients we can serve, and we will serve clients. You know, it's not our job to just, you know, let's hoard money and, you know, not serve clients. That's not what we're about. We're all here to serve those consumers who need it. So if there is an opening for the center, and there is a client who wants to come, who has a signed IPE, by all means, yep, first come, first serve. But with order of selection, if you do not have a signed IPE, you're on a wait list.
Okay. Well, that.
So, Carol.
Sorry.
That's right. So the only way that somebody's going to be going through the training center is if they're first made a client. And so they first have to go through the order selection process to become an active case. So they get the plan for employment, so the IDE. And then only at that point then would they be able to fill a slot at the training center. Did I have that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Miss Carol.
Sorry. Hang on, Robert. I'm going to say, make one more comment.
Yeah.
When that March 1st date, you know, comes, all clients who currently have a signed active IPE will continue to receive the full gamut of services. For all of those clients who do not, they will be, you know, assessed and put into a priority category and put on the wait list. So I don't know if I explained that very well earlier.
So Robert.
So just to add a little bit more color to the picture, I was just going to ask you, you know, the types of referrals we're having nowadays, what are they like? Like someone who's just blind, newly blind, that's one type of person. Then there's be someone like me or you or Barbara that has had skills or whatever, blind, and that'd be another type. And then you have people that have the blindness and have multiple other physical problems. Just kind of what percentages of kind of types of referrals are you seeing? What can we expect in the near future?
I can't give you an exact percentage, Robert, but in general terms, our consumer base it's changed a lot over time. The majority of our clients are not just blind. Our clients have severe multiple disabilities, and part of that is, you know, with the 14C, you know, subminimum wage, you know, standards, all that, Section 511 and WIOA, it is wonderful that, you know, subminimum wage is going away, but part of that Section 511 and WIOA requires, you know, all, you know, individuals in social workshops, you know, who are receiving day services, who have developmental disabilities, they are required to go through VR services to continue to receive the services through developmental disability services. So that's just one reason. You know, but times are changing. Technology is advancing, you know, especially, you know, in the medical field, the science field. So our consumers have severe multiple disabilities. So there's going to be, you know, the majority of our clients in categories A and B. So category C is probably going to be the smallest percentage of our consumers. Does that help, Robert?
Oh, sure.
So, Carol. Carlos, in his executive director report, gave some statistics about our caseload right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember the exact number for active BR cases, but it was like 391
or something.
Okay, I'd say 61, but yeah, whatever, doesn't matter. So are all 391 active cases have assigned IPE? And
no.
And if so, so we are going to have people that are in that number today as of having an active case that as of March 1, if order selection goes into becomes active at that point, they will drop from being an active case. So we'll see that number when we meet again in May. We'll not be at close to 400. It will drop down a ways.
Yes, possibly.
Okay.
Well,
I don't want to answer that.
It's not going to drop, but it's not going to increase, Mike.
Right.
Those numbers are back to December, so we got some more in January. We're going to get some more in February. Usually we have an average of 480 total for the year. So this is for this quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's next time, when the report comes in May, numbers will go up, but then after that it's not going to increase.
But when order of selection goes into place,
uh-huh.
My understanding was the only people that are going to remain as an active case are people who have assigned IPE.
No, cool.
Is that not true?
Eligible. They are eligible, and then comes the IPE. So they doesn't have to,
okay.
To have an IPE, but eligible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Because the agency, Mike, does have to, you know, figure out how much it is going to cost for referrals, applications, and we have to determine eligibility before
right.
You can even assign somebody to a wait list. So that's part of the budget, how much money we spend every year on those evaluative services to determine eligibility. I don't know if that helped, but.
Yeah, that's all. Thank you.
So this is Carol.
Yes.
Just kind of finished what I was thinking about, again, the picture is the Indian picture of people that will be finishing the programs and going to work. I guess I've just heard people talking about worries, you know, God love everybody, every blind person, but you know, like the type of folks that we're going to be dealing with over the long haul here with order of selection, they're probably going to be, again, like we're saying, you know, the people that have the majority, the more handicaps are going to get services first. So you'll, then that means there probably will be fewer people going off of Social Security. So there'll be, in that particular little category of monies that we do get sometimes, and that we used to get a lot, we'll probably get less because
correct.
They aren't going to go off of Social Security. So
correct.
That's just a concern, a comment, but again, not wanting to be disrespectful to any group.
Right.
So just a picture again of what's...
And you are correct, Robert, and the agency has noticed that the past couple of years that is part of why, because we don't get any Social Security reimbursement unless, you know, a client gets a job where they go off benefits.
Regarding pre-ents and transition, they do not fall under the order of selection in any way, do they?
Yes.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Do you ever, is there a, based on what we know now with the population out there, will we not be able to serve any of our pre-et people that we've identified?
We can serve pre-ets as potentially eligible and receive those 5 required pre-et services. Then they can apply for services, have eligibility determined, be put on a wait list, and still receive those 5 services, but that's it. It's only those 5.
Question.
Is this still public comment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jim.
Margin closed. Yeah. That's my.
Come in with you.
I didn't want Barbara to be the only one to speak. So. I understand we have to go through the process as far as the February 13th meeting to get RSA to sign off on the concept, which I can accept, that's fine. The question then becomes, let's assume several years down the road, be it 2, 3, 4 years, whatever it is, we discover we have an influx of money that is available, or somebody, rich uncle died and decided to leave the commission millions of dollars. I assume then we could dispense with order of selection at any time with the same process, is that correct?
It's actually much easier to get off of order of selection than it is to go into it.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that would be great. Do you have a rich relative?
No, they're all dead. Okay,
well.
No,
I'm kidding.
All
right, well.
Why'd you have to prefer to do it?
Also. All right, well.
I learned a lot about order of selection. Thank you, Carol and Carlos. We're going to go on. We're a little bit out of sync on the agenda, but we're going to try to. We will cover everything on it. So, the next thing on the agenda, I'll just throw out a couple things. We're going to talk about the Newsline update, and then we'll move into the CAP program. So, Newsline, everybody did get a update from Newsline coordinator. Does any board members have any questions or comments about the Newsline report?
I think there's one important thing that needs to be made. So the Newsline report will be included in the meeting minutes like it always is, and of course there'll be the details in there as far as readership and so on usage. I think the one important thing that was part of it's not in the actual Newsline report, but it was in the executive director's report, the printed version of it, which everybody will see, is that part of the budget reduction was that there will be several newspapers that will be discontinued in Nebraska as part of the commission budget reduction. And correct me if I'm wrong, it was Kearney and Norfolk, is that right?
That's right.
Yep.
Okay, so those two newspapers will be discontinued, and do we know a date as to when they will be discontinued?
End of February,
okay.
Okay. I got just kind of a question. I read the Newsline report whenever it came out a week or two ago, and something caught my attention, and I should know this, but I probably don't. What percentage or does the Commission for the Blind, do we financially support Newsline?
Yes.
In that position?
No.
What is it, percentage?
We don't pay Brian.
Oh, we don't pay him. Okay, that's my question. So we just contribute to the program in general. Is that okay? Because
yes.
my question was, is sometimes I read the reports and I'll see, well, he, I'm paraphrasing, but not much happened because I was elsewhere doing other things.
He's volunteering.
Okay, he's volunteering. Well, then plenty good then. I just wanted to catch that because I know, I'm sure whoever wants to use Newsline has a opportunity to sign up for it, but that's not his only gig in town, so he's doing other things, right? So.
Yeah, Mark?
Yes.
The Federation of the Blind in Nebraska has budget allowed in years past, done some compensation for that position.
Okay.
Now, the commission, besides funding Newsline, the service, the one way that they've helped out in Brian's role is that they have provided a telephone line in the past. Okay. Now, that number is still here, as I recall, isn't it? Or has that been discontinued?
I think it's been discontinued. I think we did that a year or two ago.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So that was the other way that it had kind of had some support for it.
Okay, it just kind of caught my eye. That makes sense, And I'm sure a very small percentage of the total Newsline cost is Brian's, what they pay him, because you got ongoing program expenses and things. So, do any other board members have any questions about Newsline?
No.
All right.
No.
Okay, thanks, Chad. Next on the agenda is the CAP complaints, and Carol or Carlos, do you want to address that?
There were two.
I'm familiar with the one from North Plata, Carol. What is the other one, though?
The other one was a Lincoln.
Okay. Those two, they both are cases in which they wanted a lot of things from the agencies that we are not supposed to provide, and we are trying to communicate with them that we are a vocational rehabilitation agency, that we don't necessarily provide everything they want at home or extra stuff. So CAP very much ruled in our favor, but there were complaints, so that's why they're in the report. They both were the same
they
kind
both,
of situation.
Both
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Two different cases, but similar situation. In fact, when the second one came, I thought it was the first one.
I think it's a good thing when we receive complaints. That means people think that there's some fairness in the process and oversight. So do you anticipate, Carlos or Carol, that we'll have more CAP complaints with the order of selection that, hey, I'm not getting everything I need? And
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well.
Well, not only with the order of selection, but
just the fact that we are going to be tougher on making sure that they use comparable benefits first, because we were very flexible on that.
Okay, yeah. It's a strange thought.
Because, we have less money, can someone complain and win, saying, hey, in the past we've gotten these types of program services or support, and now they're not available anymore? Is that a complaint that they can win, or like?
Yeah, it's a valid complaint, but not necessarily something that they can win. As long as it's in their IPE and we say we are going to pay for it, we have to pay for it. But comparable benefits is something that it's there already in the client's rights and responsibilities. They signed that, we signed that. And they have to look for those. And we are helping on that too.
Can I make one follow-up?
Yeah. Go ahead, Derek.
Also, as a part of the IPE, under the rights and responsibilities, there is a clause that says all services depend on funds being available.
Oh, says what?
All services depend on funds being available.
Oh,
That's nice.
All right, well, good. Unless there's any other comments from the board on CAP complaints, I'll move on to the next couple agenda items.